If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
And what I always teach is that the things that are causing you the most pain and suffering and stress and overwhelm are actually your greatest strengths.
Welcome back to a new episode of the Healing Hormones Podcast. I'm Nina Boyce, your host, certified hormone and fertility coach and Reiki practitioner. On this episode, I am talking to Victoria Albina, who is a certified life coach and breathwork meditation guide with a passion for helping women realize that they are their own best healers, which is something that I promote on this podcast over and over and over again. You know your body better than anyone else, and you are your greatest healer. It's so true. And you can tell during this conversation with Victoria that she truly believes that from the inside out. Like, this episode felt like a cup of warm tea for my soul, if that makes sense. It was just a really nice, cozy, super comforting conversation. And I know that you guys are going to get that same exact vibe when you listen to this episode with Victoria. Her work focuses on helping women break free from codependency, perfectionism, people pleasing, and learn to reclaim their joy again, which, holy cow, if just reading through that, you were like, that sounds like me, you are not alone. So Victoria is a UCSF-trained family nurse practitioner, has a master's degree in public health from Boston University School of Public Health, and a BA in Latin American Studies from Oberlin College. She's been working in health and wellness for over 20 years and lives on occupied Lenape territory in New York's Hudson Valley. I really hope that you guys enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So let's go ahead and hop right in. Hey, Victoria, I am so excited to have you on the podcast today. I really have been intrigued with the work that you do around healing the nervous system. And you were mentioning even before we started recording codependent thinking and how our thoughts affect our body. And there's so much beyond nutrition and supplementation that I feel like we don't even consider when it comes to hormone healing and healing our body. And that's where you come in. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. So, you know, of course, naturally, I want to jump in with your story, like right from the get-go, because you had your own experience with struggling with, you know, intermittent anxiety and depression. And I think I read like gut issues and all mm-hmm. sorts of things, but mm-hmm. were misdiagnosed for a while. So mm-hmm. what led you to this work and to your own healing?
Yeah. So I was sick pretty much from birth. I had, like you mentioned, wicked bad digestive issues and the mental health concerns that come with having severe dysbiosis, a lot of imbalances in the gut microbiome. What I didn't realize in all of those years was how profoundly my mindset, my thinking about myself, the stories, the narratives I was telling about me in the world, my value, my worth, all of that was impacting my nervous system, my physiology, and was a real barrier to my truly and sustainably healing my body mm-hmm. because I didn't realize that I needed to be paying equal, if not more, attention to my mind.
Oh my gosh, I relate to that so much. I've taken all of the tests, like the hair tissue mineral analysis test and the gut test, and I've done the Dutch hormone test. And it's weird that we're having this conversation now because I was just journaling this morning about how, aside from all of that,
learning to just calm the body and like acknowledge my thoughts is the most healing thing. And I feel like people don't realize that. Like, I maybe it's because we're not taught that, you know? So in medical, the conventional medical system, we're always looking for like what the test result is and like what I can take to fix it. And we really underestimate the fact that our mind plays such a huge role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think there is in the modern Western medical system, there is such a disconnect between psyche and soma, mm-hmm. right? The body and the mind are seen as two separate camps, right? And even the separate parts of the body are seen as separate, yeah. right? You've got primary care and the gyno and the nephrologist, and none of them are really talking about the human as a whole.
Right.
And the role that that mind-body-spirit connection plays in our wellness in a truly holistic way, not sort of a lip service way. And so, yeah, even in functional medicine, which I practiced for many years, had a very successful clinic on occupied Lenape territory in New York City. And, you know, even there, right, we can fall into this green pharmacology where mm-hmm. we're using supplements and herbs and nutrition as a stand-in for really taking that deep dive look into what's keeping our body from healing itself.
Mm. I love that you mentioned even in functional medicine, because it's not just like conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. You've worked with a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor. It is very much that, what did you say? Green medicine or what did you...
pharmacology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I'll just define the term. So Western medicine is very much based on one pill for one ill.
Yeah.
If you have heartburn, we give you a pill that turns your stomach off. Problem solved.
Right.
Right. And so in more holistic medicine, we maybe say, let's take heartburn, for example. So we'll use the mucilaginous herbs, we'll use licorice and marshmallow right. and aloe and slippery elm to soothe the gut. And that can help for a short time, but at the end of the day, we're not asking what the emotional factors are that are leading us to get into the fight or flight
right.
that's slowing the migrating motor complex in our small intestine, which keeps the small intestine from emptying, therefore leading to a backup of gases, particularly in the presence of like a bacterial overgrowth like SIBO, that's leading to more pressure on the stomach. That's leading mm-hmm. to acid reflux, mm-hmm. right?
Like, because you're still choosing a supplement, even if it's a natural supplement, to get to that one ailment. But it's like, are right. we really getting to the root of why our body is in fight or flight is what it comes down to.
Exactly. Exactly.
I believe in that more than you know. So, okay, when you were struggling with your own health, how did you come to terms with, okay, I've done all of these things, maybe I need to take a look at where my body and why my body is in such fight or flight response all the time?
Well, I think part of it is being an inquisitive, curious, nerdy human. I liken myself as a human, but also as a clinician, to like the most annoying 3-year-old who's like, yeah, but why? But why? But why?
Yeah.
Right? And really honoring my own curiosity and knowing, I just have always had this deep knowing that there was something deeper than the physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I trust and believe that I did everything physiologically possible to heal myself. And so my SIBO would go into remission. The stool test showed the parasite was gone.
Right.
And yet I still was having really, really significant symptoms most of the time. And so in asking like, why, the thing that seemed so obvious eventually, yeah. like years later, right? You know, and you're like, oh, that's duh. But it wasn't duh for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. Was that like, I still didn't think highly of myself. I did not have that deep, profound positive self-regard and belief in my own worth and value. And I was enacting that by continuing to live in weight, codependent, perfectionist, and people-pleasing thinking.
Mm.
And that thinking led me to put other people's wellness, other people's mental health, other people's emotions ahead of my own and to make them into the projects that I needed to fix while not taking care of myself. In ways that were so insidious and sneaky, I couldn't even see it.
Mm-hmm. How many of us are stuck in that people pleasing, trying, like, we're doing so good because we're caring for others, but we're not actually reversing that to ourselves. So being a Reiki practitioner, I'm always focusing on the chakras. The heart chakra, I'm always like, ooh, I feel that there's an imbalance here. Like, you give so much to everyone else, but you don't give enough. You don't give your own heart chakra to yourself. I think that that is so incredibly common.
Yes. And I would say particularly humans socialized as women. I think often we are literally taught to put ourselves last.
Yep.
Right? It's those small, simple messages that have a profound effect on a childhood psyche of like the number of times my clients are like, oh yeah, after dinner, my brothers and my dad would go watch TV and us girls would do the dishes.
Right. Yes.
Right. So they get to rest, but we don't? Fascinating. Right? And so...
No, I was just going to say, from an Italian family, that's very traditional. Like, both of my parents were born in Italy. Yep. That's what I grew up seeing. Like, the women in the family do everything. I mean, the men go to work and they support the family in that aspect. Like, very traditional in that way. But like, the women do everything: the feeding, the cleaning, like everything with the children. And I'm about to be a mom here in April. This is my first baby, and I'm already like. Thank you. I'm already like, I need to keep remembering to take care of myself and take care of this baby. Like, you can do both.
Right. Absolutely. I think it's incumbent upon us to learn when we didn't know how previously to fill our own emotional cups so that we can take care of ourselves and the community and the collective, right? Because collective healing is so important.
But how do we learn that? So like you mentioned, we've grown up, a lot of us, I think, have grown up in this same way of never really reflecting and turning back on ourselves and focusing on what we need mentally and emotionally. So it seems like unless we hit a trauma or we hit that rock bottom where it's like, oh my gosh, I need to change something, it's hard for us to get to that point where we start making those changes.
Yeah, well, I think it can also be a choice, right? We can recognize where the bottom potentially is and make a decision now, like, I do not want to go to there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to let things get so bad that I'm in full adrenal burnout, that my thyroid's like, no thanks, right? That my digestion's a hot mess and my hormones are all over the place.
Right. Like,
right, we can decide from here if we are not yet there, I don't want to go there. Right. I've heard these stories enough. This is resonant enough in my field that I know what that looks like. And so I think we start through the process of the three A's: awareness, acceptance, action. The culture in the US is very much, and we're recording this not far away from New Year's resolution time,
right?
Which is like the pinnacle, the apex of this American framework of, I see a problem, I'm going to take wild perfectionist action to change everything all at once, right? Which looks like, okay, so I haven't exercised in 6 months, but today, today is the magical day where as of tomorrow, I'm going to exercise every single day.
And we think that that's going to work. And then when it doesn't work, we think we failed. Like, it's not that we failed. It's the whole idea of like, I'm going to flip everything upside down and start tomorrow. That always fails.
Exactly. Right. Because you can't skip steps in healing. It's not how things work, right? Like, you can't just jump to take action and expect that that's going to get you where you need to go. It needs to be aligned action. And so aligned action starts with awareness, because you can't heal what you can't feel, right? And so if we don't recognize what we are actually doing, right? Like, what are the ways that you are enacting perfectionism, people-pleasing, codependent thinking in your own daily life? Where are you looking out into the world and saying, I would be happy if he were different. Mm-hmm. I would feel respected if she spoke to me differently. Right? These kind of statements that put the locus and the ownership and the responsibility for our feelings squarely on the shoulders of someone outside ourselves, which is effectively giving all of our power away.
Mm-hmm. We give our power right? away so often and we don't even realize it. Like what you were saying with awareness, I don't think, like a lot of times we're just going through the motions. And we have to intentionally stop and realize, holy crap, I'm giving my power away all of the time. And I didn't even realize
it. Right, right, right. And so that's why we start there. That's why we start with awareness and really learning to become our own watcher, to really cultivate that skill of tapping into our own intuition and really getting meta with it, really thinking about our thinking to see where we're keeping ourselves stuck. Mm-hmm. And so the next step is acceptance. And my clients always joke that acceptance is the step that sucks the most because it's really challenging often at first, right? To accept our own role in keeping ourselves in these archetypical patterns, the savior, the martyr, the saint, the fixer, right? These patterns that keep us out of our power, keep us beholden, keep us from really taking that action for our lives in a self-loving, not perfectionist, mm-hmm. sustainable way.
Well, it's easier to blame everything else, right? Than to turn around and realize that we need to accept these things within ourselves. I do think when you accept it, it doesn't mean that you have to judge yourself either. It's just acknowledging it, right? It's like, oh, okay, this is what I'm doing. Okay, like we can work through this.
Right. And what's fascinating is that, so because my focus, the focus of my coaching work is supporting women to see and heal their codependent habits and to step into their worthiness, what I often see is this duality that's really fascinating. It's both this abdication of responsibility for our feelings and our choices, i.e., he made me sad, she made me stressed, work is overwhelming, right? That like, I'm not creating my feelings with my thoughts about these circumstances, and taking on absolutely inhumane levels of blame. Mm-hmm. Right? This deep belief that because we don't think that we are worthy and valuable and important and amazing and born perfect, we think that other people's bad moods, other people's anger, their irritability, their annoyance, their criticism, their judgment, etc., are our fault and we are to blame. Mm-hmm. So in codependent thinking, what it comes down to is quite frankly a lack of balance and a lack of discernment. Like we've at some point, not lost, but sort of dropped the thread of connection with our capacity to say, oh yeah, that is mine. I am responsible for that. And double-edged sword, his bad mood, not mine. Mm-hmm. That is squarely his. Mm-hmm. He can go handle that and I'm going to go for a walk.
Yeah. How freeing is that thought process?
Totally. Totally. It's so amazing. And it's why my course is 6 months, because it takes time, mm-hmm. right? This is a slow daily process of unlearning and relearning how to think about ourselves, right? And how to think about ourselves in relationship with the people we love in the world.
Mm-hmm. It's wild that we have to relearn how to think about ourselves. And this goes back to like trauma in our lives, like big or small, our childhood, you know, we create these stories about who we think we are, and then we carry them around for so long that we have to relearn who we really are.
Yeah, yeah. We get to relearn it, and we get to really understand where the glitch happened in that mm-hmm. internal matrix. And what I always teach is that the things that are causing you the most pain and suffering and stress and overwhelm are actually your greatest strengths, mm-hmm. right? So when I talk about codependent thinking, the framework is never you're sick, you're broken, you are deficient, right? That there's a problem with your character. What I teach and what I firmly believe is that all of those habits that are making you so miserable now as an adult are gifts from your inner child.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They are survival mechanisms that come from your family blueprint. And the work is to give them wild amounts of love so that they don't need to show up to defend you and protect you.
I love that. You know, when I got into this work, it was because I was struggling with anxiety really bad. Like it always was there in my life, hit or, you know, randomly, but there was a period of my life about 5 years ago where it felt uncontrollable. And at that point, it wasn't just the anxiety. It was also, of course, as you know, the body gets in the mix. So my pyramids were all out of whack and my gut was out of whack. Everything is related. But I remember one of like the first blogs I ever wrote, this is probably like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but it was why thanking my anxiety changed my life. Because my first therapy appointment, and it wasn't until out of college and whatever, I finally went to therapy. But I remember my therapist saying something about the anxiety. And I was like, well, I just hate it. And this isn't me. And I don't want it here. And like, I was fighting it. I hated it so much. And then it wasn't until I realized like, oh, I don't have to fight this part of me anymore. Like I can accept that it's here and then I can learn from it. And I can realize that this is actually a tool that is it's trying to teach me something. It changed the game for me when I was able to look at my struggles in that way, which is what I feel like it's kind of what you were sharing before.
Right. Yeah. I think that thanking, honoring, really recognizing that you survived whatever you survived because your brain came up with these habits, these ways of thinking about you and the world. And they really deeply served you for however long you needed them. Mm-hmm. It's like getting mad at ourselves for having codependent perfectionist and people-pleasing thinking or whatever your own habit is like picking up like your sweater from when you were six and being like, this sweater is garbage. It is tiny. It doesn't even fit me. This is a terrible sweater. And like, that's just not true. It's a great sweater. It's just like built for a six-year-old.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Of course it doesn't fit you anymore. But when we fight the anxiety, the depression, all those internal mindset stories, and we fight them and we get mad at them, it's like trying to wriggle a grown body into a like little kid's sweater and getting mad at the sweater.
Mm-hmm. And then it snowballs from there and it feels even worse and it feels a lot harder.
Yeah. There's the Buddhist concept that I love of the second arrow, which is this concept that life flings the first arrow, right? Whatever stressful, distressing, traumatic, whatever level it is, like whatever the death, the job loss, the breakup, that's the first arrow. And then the second arrow is the one we fling into our own tender hearts. Mm. When we get mad at ourselves, when we play the blame game, the shame game with ourselves, and we compound our own suffering, either by resisting feeling the suffering and like resisting the fact of whatever challenging thing happened being real, or we resist the emotion, or we just double down, right? And make it all so much worse for ourselves, which is so wildly unnecessary and doesn't get us where we want to get to.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious, or did we touch on action? I think we did like through the conversation, but I want to make sure we like round back to it. So we had awareness, acceptance, and action.
Yeah, thank you. So action, right? So really taking courageous action from our heart. For me, before we are ready to take action to change our lives, we need to get right with our thinking and our mindset. And I teach this thought work protocol that is based in cognitive behavioral theory and positive psychology. And I bring a lot of somatics in because when we're trying to change our mindset, we need to make sure our body is on board, right? If not, if we're trying to force a new thought into our psyche, into our neural pathways, the body will say no. Right. And so
do you think that's why some people will say, well, I just can't meditate, or that this doesn't work for me, or this type of thinking doesn't work for me? It's because the body isn't quite prepared or ready to accept it yet. Or I'm just curious, because I wonder if other people are like, I resonate with that.
Yeah, I think that can often be the case, right? That we are trying to force a solution into like a square peg round hole kind of thing. And we haven't gotten our soma, our somatic, our bodily presence aligned with that new choice. When it comes to meditation specifically, I think that we live in a culture that really privileges distraction.
Yes.
That really prioritizes TV and cell phones and social media and numbing ourselves, right? Buffering against feeling our feelings with the latest sale and the latest cocktail and the latest anything other than really slowing down and getting present, right? And so I think it can, particularly if we had a childhood or adolescence in which it behooved us to flee emotionally and flee, you know, as a nervous system response, to really not be present to what was going on, to what felt challenging. Getting really present with ourselves, our lives, our relationships, our careers, our everything now as adults, it makes sense that it would feel really scary.
Right.
And so I think when people say, oh, I just can't meditate, what they're often voicing is, it feels really scary and I don't trust myself to be safe. My nervous system doesn't trust that I will be safe if I let myself be present with me. I'm scared of what I will see there in the stillness. And that's totally understandable. Like, I get that both intellectually and in my own body. I have absolutely experienced that barrier. And it's a loving one. It's a self-protective one. But again, it doesn't serve us as adults to continue to tell the story. Oh, being with me is too hard. I can't do that. I won't do that.
It's all about coming back home to yourself.
Yes.
And the work is not always easy, which is why there are coaches like you that help us to do it. Because it is hard to do it all on your own. I know that I'm still in different transitions in my life. Like now being pregnant, a lot of old thought processes have come back up, and fears and things. And I'm like, the work is, you know, it's never done. Like, you always are checking back in with yourself and learning how to come back home with yourself. And there are people out there to help you. Because sometimes it's hard to do it on your own.
Well, and from a nervous system, like a nerdy perspective, like, humans are pack animals. We are not meant to go this thing alone.
Right.
That's what, right, late stage capitalism teaches us, is this rugged individualism, this like Horatio Alger's pull yourself up by the bootstraps, do everything on your own BS. I think it's garbage. We need each other. And so when we can co-regulate, which means be in the part of our nervous system called the ventral vagal part, which is part of our parasympathetic nervous system, when we can get into that place where we feel safe and connected with another human, then the growth is exponential.
Do you have any specific tools that people can even start right now to access the parasympathetic? Because I just find that we are so often not there, and that your body has to be in the parasympathetic mode or rest and digest or whatever you want to call it to begin healing. Like, we have to start there. So I'm curious, or get our body there. I'm curious if you have some favorite tools that people can try on for size.
Yeah. So again, awareness to start there.
Yeah.
Your body is constantly working to shift you into ventral vagal, into parasympathetic. It is very important to me is to say very clearly, being in sympathetic activation, which is fight or flight, driven by adrenaline, norepinephrine, eventually cortisol, or being in the part of parasympathetic called dorsal vagus, which is the freeze part, the immobilization, like deer in the headlights, neither one of those states is bad. It is not bad to go into these things. It should be like a sine wave, like if we can nerd back to calculus, mm-hmm. right? Like a wave up and down. And it is normal and natural for a mammal to fluctuate between all of these states mm-hmm. throughout the day, right? So when you wake up in the morning, you're in a little dorsal as you're coming out of sleep and the melatonin's being shunted out of your body. And you need a little sympathetic activation in order to like get up and put on pants and right. like turn on the Zoom, right? And I don't want to be without sympathetic activation because I'll get run over by a car.
We need these. Right? Yeah, like, these things are here yes, in our physiology yes. for a reason. We just sometimes turn one on more than the other.
Yes. Oh, exactly where I was going. Love it. Yes, exactly. Our system can get confused, like anyone can get turned around at any point and can think that our safety is linked to hypervigilance or to always giving in, mm-hmm. right? The people pleasing, a more depressive sort of affect that like, okay, fine, whatever you want. Like I can't anymore. Kind of energy of dorsal vagus. And so, yeah, so what helps us to get into ventral vagal as much as we can and to really feel, I really come into a deep belief that we have the capacity to take ourselves there, to bring ourselves, as you so perfectly said, home to ourselves, mm-hmm. is that deep connection with self, right? Is building that small daily trust in yourself to resource you. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about resources, what this means in terms of polyvagal theory and nervous system nerds are the things that bring you into ventral vagal, that bring you down out of sympathetic, and that bring you up from dorsal. The things that help you to feel grounded, safe, calm, right? That help you to know everything's actually okay. Right. I'm not being attacked in this moment. So my go-tos for resourcing and grounding. So if we are in sympathetic and more of a panic, some of the things that can be really helpful is mindful distraction. And I know that sounds mm-hmm. like saying jumbo shrimp, like paradoxical, mm-hmm. but it's not. So mindful distraction is deciding, okay, I'm getting worked up. I'm getting anxious in this moment. I'm going to use a tool to allow my brain to calm down, such as using my fine motor skills. So I would invite you to stretch out your hand in front of you and then take your thumb and touch it to each finger while counting. Mm-hmm. So touch your index finger 1, middle finger 2, ring finger 3, pinky 4, backwards 4, 3, 2, 1. So you're inviting the two hemispheres of your brain to connect and to talk as you're doing a fine motor skill and then also counting. Mm-hmm. Other things that help with panic are just to really think of yourself not any different from a puppy or like a newborn human baby, right? They freak out when they don't feel warm, mm-hmm. right? And so holding a cup of hot tea, wrapping yourself in a warm blanket. This is why those weighted anxiety blankets really help. Also using things like lavender. Mm-hmm. So lavender's an amazing plant. I totally love her so much. Lavender helps shunt open the calcium ion channels in our bloodstream, which things like pranayama also do. And it helps to calm the body the same way a benzodiazepine drug does. So, right?
I like lavender too.
Oh, so good. So without the dangers of like the benzos are Xanax, Valium, those kinds of drugs, you can smell some lavender, use some lavender oil. That's often why it's in like sleepy time right. kind of tea, right? Because it brings you out of sympathetic into ventral vagal. Mm-hmm. And so then if we find ourselves in a freeze, our bodies want is a little bit of mobilization energy. We want to feel ourselves being able to activate without it being dangerous. So shaking your hands or your limbs, right? And just like letting your body sort of free move can start to bring some mobilization energy in. Cold in the vasoconstriction can help us to activate just a little bit. So running cold water on your wrists, drinking something cold or like putting a little ice cube in your mouth for just a little minute. These things can be really helpful. When we're in a freeze, when we're in that dorsal immobilization, we need a little more get up and go, but we also need to let our bodies know, baby, you're safe in this moment.
Right.
Right? Like it's safe for you to be alive, connected, present here. And so this is when we'll use orienting. And I share a free orienting exercise on my website. Yeah. So if folks want to go to victoriaalbina.com, right there on the homepage, there's a place you can put your name and email in and get the orienting exercise, a boundaries exercise, and a couple others.
We'll have to link it in the show notes too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you can grab those for free. It's really helpful. So orienting means orienting, like understanding, helping your body consciously, your nervous system consciously, to know where you are. Because what our brains are saying is, I'm freaked out. I have to get at the back of the cave and hide right now. But what you're actually doing is having a conversation with your boss or your roommate or your partner or your mom or whomever. You don't need to hide. You get to show up should you want to. And so orienting can be looking around the room. And I would recommend that for folks who feel this frequently, decide what you're going to do ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So you're not like trying to figure it out in the moment, because that's not going to work. So one of my favorites, because I love the color blue, is to look around the room and count the number of blue things.
A good one. I remember when I was having, this was again, like that really hard time of like about 5 years
ago. Yeah.
I was in the car and my body was in total panic mode. I was on this trip to Tennessee with my girlfriends. It was so fun. And I was just not in a good place. It was like the height, I think, of everything. And I actually, that's when I had my first really, really big panic attack too. And I texted my friend who's a psychologist. She was like, look out the window. And she said, start, like, I think she told me to pick a color, pick something, and to focus in on that, to just center my brain and get my body back into the present. And I, everything you're sharing, it's really about like coming back into the body. It's so important. Yes. Like, I love the one with the counting with your thumb on your fingers, like, because you're focusing the mind, you're focusing in on the feel. I mean, it's activating all of your senses, which is why, you know, yoga is a big one for me that I personally respond to, because it gets me back into my body, into my breath. And it's so helpful. But yeah, it's like, we have to relearn how to come back to it sometimes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a gift we get to choose to give ourselves, so that we can feel more regulated and more in our capacity throughout our day, throughout our week, throughout a lifetime.
Yes. And then we learn these tools and we take them everywhere with us.
Exactly. Right. Because wherever you go, there you are. And how you show up in one place is how you show up everywhere, whether you realize it or not.
I love those tips. Oh, they're so good. This all makes me think of going back to hormones and the body for a second. And, you know, I kind of switching gears, I guess. But you struggled with, you mentioned SIBO and parasites. And these are real things that affect our body. Like, and when our hormones are all out of balance, it affects our body. So is there a way that you find you can balance both? So how do we address the physical of what's going on, but also not forget that everything we've been talking about is just as important, if not more important, because your body has to get into this place where it feels safe to heal. Because I think my biggest struggle with even the work I do with my own clients is there seems to be a barrier sometimes with that. Like, it's like, but no, physically, this is how I feel. I need to just focus on this. And we always push the other stuff aside. Like, I can't slow down, or I can't do this, right? We just feel like it's not as important for some reason.
Yes. I think we have been taught to believe that it's not as important. And I think, you know, again, that internal work can feel so scary, whereas we can have this false sense of control that comes from, okay, I did my GI Max, my elastase is, right? Like, we can privilege data over feelings because that's what we've been taught to do, right? Like, I'm also trained in epidemiology. Like, I have a master's in public health. I'm a total nerd for data. Like, I'm like casually totally dating Fauci in my mind. Like casually, but like totally. Yeah. But I mean, I should probably tell him.
Let him know. See what happens.
Let him know anything. P.S. My birthday this year, my sister made me a t-shirt with his face on it that says, God. Don't want an ouchie, trust Dr. Fauci.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Have you worn it yet?
Oh my God, like a thousand.
I'm curious because there's so many opinions in the world, what people say when they see it. Like, do you ever get like a snare? Or do you get people that are like, I love your shirt?
I get a lot of, I love your shirt. And I think if people are like glaring, I like ran out of fucks for that so long ago.
You're walking
I don't
proudly.
Even notice.
You're like, this is,
yeah,
I totally. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also in New York and we got hit so hard in March, April, May. Like, I don't, you know.
Everybody's loving your shirt in New York.
Everyone's loving my shirt. Anyway, back on track. Yeah. You know, right. So we've been taught to privilege data as though science and like woo and energy work weren't the same thing. Right. Because like, I mean, we can talk quantum physics and we can talk about like the science of the energetic field. And I also think we are all on our own path in this life and we are available for different understandings of ourselves and the world in different seasons. Yeah. And I used to try to convince people that I knew the right way and they needed to look at their mindset and just, you know, I don't want to run the 14th Dutch, and the, right? Like the answer is your labs are all perfect, you know, like it might behoove you to do the mindset. Or like I used to try to convince people of that, but I'm no longer interested in what I think to be a rather paternalistic enterprise. Mm-hmm. So I let folks know what I think it would be useful for you to look at this codependent habit, not just your stool test, to look at where you're people pleasing, not just your Dutch, and not dissing any of these tests. I love these tests, but right. But you know, if folks aren't available for it, if that's not what is up for them, cool. But like in a very real way, like cool, 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 cool. Because that's what healing my own codependency has taught me. I don't have to fix anyone else's life because I can't. And if someone isn't available to hear, your mindset is jacking your nervous system and it's keeping your small intestine from emptying your food into your large because science, then like, cool, right?
That is- Again, such a freeing thing. As a coach, hearing that is so freeing. But then in general, like translating that to anything, like you don't need to heal anybody else, like, or the people pleasers. Nope. You don't need.
It's not possible.
Yeah. And it's also so true that we are all on our own path and different seasons. So sometimes for me, sometimes I'm in a season where it's a lot harder for me to do the things where I know I need to check in with my mindset and slow down and do these mindfulness activities and all of the things. And then other times I'm real in it. I'm like, wow, this feels amazing. Why don't I do this more often? And I think we just have to give ourselves grace that we are on our own timeline and our own learning here, and we'll get to it when the time is right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it really comes down to, for me, staying in my own lane and knowing I can't want someone else's growth and change for them more than they want it for themselves.
That's very, very true. Oh, so many good things here on this podcast. So in your work, can you just share a little bit for anyone listening? I know that you have meditations. I know that you do private coaching and other things like your life coaching. Can you just share a little bit about the resources that you have and how you use them to help people come back? I'm going to say it again, like come back home to themselves.
Yeah. So the primary tools that I use are somatic and cognitive. So really teaching folks that you can choose your own thoughts. So whatever thoughts you've been taught about your value, your worth, about your own feelings and experiences and emotions, about your own life, like you literally do get to choose the thoughts that you're going to play on repeat in your own mind, like a cassette tape.
Can I chime in with something with that?
Yeah.
I feel like one of my biggest pet peeves, I guess, and I would love to hear your opinion on this, is I know that getting diagnosed with things can be helpful for sure, because then we're able to get help for it. But I've found that when we're labeled as like, I am diagnosed with depression, or I'm diagnosed with general anxiety disorder or panic disorder, then for some reason we create this story that I can't choose because this is what I'm diagnosed with and this is what my body has done. And I find it to be really crippling, like, because your brain can get really stuck on that. And I'm just curious if you've seen that play out in people that you've worked with, because ultimately you're right. Like, we do have this ability to choose.
Yeah. I think it's important to know what, let me just be very thoughtful here. As ever evolving humans, there are times when having the diagnostic words can be really liberatory, right? So, okay, wait, it's not just that, like, I'm bananas, or like I'm a terrible person because I get sad. This is what my microbiome, my biochemistry, like this is what's happening within my physiology currently in response to my environment, the circumstances, and my own thoughts. And what I think is really important is, and I think this is where you're going, is not to stop there.
Right. Because
I think
I was just going to say, because you're right, knowing that, like when I acknowledged that what I was feeling was called anxiety, and this is what was happening on a physiological level in my body, I was like, ooh, okay, that does make sense. But then you're right. I think sometimes we get trapped there because we feel like that's just what it has to be now.
Right. And I want to give both, invite people to take more responsibility, but also like call it what it is. I don't think it's that we get trapped. I think it's that we stop.
Okay. I like that phrasing.
And yeah. And for me, what's important there is not just the responsibility piece, but there's an empowerment piece in there. Cause if you stopped, you can get going again. Right. Whereas if you got trapped, well, game's over. There's a lock on that door. Like you can't get out. So we stop there often because we aren't taught that there's another way. We don't know. And sometimes because we've been so exhausted by everything that's happened in our lives that we need to pause, right? And that's totally fine. That's normal. That's natural. That's understandable. And each of us on our own journey gets to decide if that's enough for us, right? And so for me in my life, it wasn't enough to say, oh, you know, I just like get depressed, or like, oh, you know, I just get anxious. It wasn't enough for me to just take that as a, like, as though it were a fact and not seek to find those deeper levels of healing that helped me to understand that that's not a steady state, right? So it's helpful. You speak Italian,
no,
right?
I actually don't. Isn't that crazy?
Don't.
My parents never spoke.
No,
it to
it's
me.
Really common. It's really common in immigrant kids. I'm just lucky that I'm from Argentina, that my immigrant parents spoke to me in Spanish.
Mine were little too. Like my dad was 9 and my mom was a baby when she came over. So I feel like the baby mom was like, you have to be American now. And then my dad just sort of like, he still speaks it and understands totally, but never spoke it to me.
It's really common, actually. Yeah. So just know you're very not alone.
Because I'm but it's okay.
All right. We can coach on that later. But it makes me think of romance languages. And there's like in Spanish, ser and estar. Like je suis and je in French, right? So it's this understanding of like, I am in the definitive and like I am. So like I am Maria Victoria Albina Cordero, that is who I am. And in this moment, I am in the Hudson Valley of New York. Right? So it's not taking the diagnostic, the word, the label, depression, and making it part of your identity.
Yeah, that's it. That's the key right there.
Right? Because we take on, and I saw this in clinic, and I did this, right? I became my illness. My illness became me because it became part of my ego, part of my identity, part of right? The story of who I am versus just part of me for a season, maybe longer. Okay. Right? There was this like heavy energy of making it a problem versus just making it a thing, right? Like, okay, cool.
I was just going to say that what you just said was the game changer for me, was when I was able to disassociate like those things that I felt like I was struggling with my identity, because I would feel embarrassed. I would feel like just like not good enough, you know, or why me, or why do I struggle more than this person in this aspect, and the blame game and all of that. But when I realized that it didn't have to define me as a person, then it was like, oh, then I could just accept that it would be there and maybe fleeting, or maybe it would be there for a little bit and then it would go away and that was okay. It was just something that I was dealing with in the moment, as opposed to like who I was. Like, that's so daunting.
Oh, totally. Of course, because it consumes you. And it's like energetically, it walks ahead of you announcing itself into the room. And so it makes it hard to not live into it. Mm-hmm. Right. So for me, when my identity was really wrapped up in being sick and a patient, for me, and I'm only talking about me here, it became an excuse, because from my people pleasing, it was very challenging to say no, to have healthy boundaries. And so I would allow, like, oh, I have a bellyache. Oh, no, I'm sick again today. To be the stand-in for taking care of myself in ways that I didn't know how.
That is.
And so, of course, yeah, of course I wanted to grasp onto that. It was working.
Right,
for
me. Because you're like, this is going to feel safe in the moment, but it's not in the long run.
Right. And I had there was no like objective understanding, or like there was no understanding that it was not serving me in the long run. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I didn't have the distance that like that awareness, acceptance, action, the thought work protocol, really looking at our thoughts and the feelings they're creating for us. That gives us the clarity to see like, ooh, I am reinforcing this neural groove in my own mind that believes, oh, I have a little bellyache. Oh, it's a problem. Oh, I can't go out. Oh, I'm sick. I am a sick person. Mm-hmm.
I love that train of thought too. If it's like you build upon it and then you get to that final, I'm a sick person. Like, oh wait, that's not true. Right. Is it? Like, let's debunk all of that.
Right. And I will, of course, call out the other side of it, which is what I see in my clients all day, every day, as they're working to overcome codependency, which is this long-suffering, enduring, martyry, savory, put others ahead of us. So for me, it was often either the I can't because identity, sick identity, or, but sometimes at the same time, you know, I feel really terrible, but if you need me to, I'll be right there. Right. So it was my way to say, I don't want to do this, but I feel so beholden to keeping everyone else happy with me. Of course, I'm going to do it to my own detriment. Instead of saying no, I'm going to let you know that I'm suffering on your behalf. Mm-hmm. Yikes.
So we do it in both aspects.
Totally.
The good news is we can learn how to undo it.
It's so true. It's so true. My life is so amazing now. And it's, you know, even a decade ago, I could not have imagined the mental health that I've created for myself, the wellness, the healing, the community, the business. Yeah. Yeah. It's so amazing.
I'm so glad that we were connected. And I'm just, when I started to read about the work you were doing, it fits so well with the things that I do and my beliefs. And I've been on a very similar journey with my own health and understanding. And I just cannot stress the fact that it really was me like developing my own sort of spiritual practice too, and opening up. And, you know, I'm big into tarot and Reiki and all of that kind of stuff, but it was helping me to realize that there's this whole other world of acceptance and healing out there that helped me in the long run, along with all the gut tests and the hormone tests and the nutrition and all of that, you know? So it's like,
yes, it's all important
and we definitely have to marry both. So thank you so much for coming and sharing on the podcast. And if you wouldn't mind just shouting out again, and we'll link this all in the show notes, where can people find you if they want to work with you and your website, and you're on Instagram, you have a podcast, like just go ahead and share all of this with them.
I'm everywhere. Yeah. So my podcast is called Feminist Wellness. It's for humans of all genders who, yeah, want greater wellness and freedom and self-love in their lives. It's free. It's weekly. It's on like literally all of the things, Apple and Stitcher and blah, 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 blah. So that's Feminist Wellness. I'm on the Instagram at Victoria Albina Wellness. I give good gram. Go check it out. You can head over to my website, victoriaalbina.com, and right there on the homepage, right under my picture, you can put your name and emails in to get a set of free meditations sent right to your email inbox. And if you would like to work with me or learn more about it, you can head over to victoriaalbina.com/masterclass. And so the way to work with me these days is through my 6-month intensive, high touch, amazing coaching program, where we look at codependent, perfectionist, and people pleasing thought habits and the ways they are keeping us stuck while always praising and honoring our beautiful inner children for all the gifts they've given us.
Love, 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 love. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. And I can't wait for everybody listening to follow along and keep up with your work and start healing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much to Victoria for coming on and sharing with us today. If you want to keep up with her outside of the podcast, make sure to visit her on Instagram at Victoria Albina Wellness and over on her website, which is victoriaalbina.com. We'll have all of that, as always, linked in the show notes for you. And just a reminder that if you are interested in booking a personal Reiki session with me, whether in person or virtual, I would love to get that scheduled with you. I'll have that link in the show notes, or you can check out my website to read all about what a session looks like at nourishedwithmina.com/private-reiki-session, and you can book there as well. And the really cool thing is that if you're local to Columbus, we are now in my new office space downtown, right off of Broad Street at the Haven Mansion. So if you are local, I would love for you to be one of my first private Reiki sessions in the new space. I am so excited about it, and I cannot wait to get some visitors in there to check it out with me. All right, that's all I have for you this week. I will talk to you guys next Monday. See ya.